Attention, citizens! It's time for Super Pulp Science!
This is Super Pulp Science, where we talk about how genre gets made. Now, dear listener, normally, I would introduce my long-suffering co-host with the most, Justin Curry, known the world over as Chasing Artwork, but events have transpired to replace him. And I might even bring a guest on, a letterer or writer like Lyndon Radchenka. I've also managed to replace him. So if you have been a long-time listener to the show, I would like to introduce you to two very special secret keepers. Darcy.
Hello.
And Gabby.
Hi.
So for the dear listeners, so you know, there are different levels of commitment in a relationship, and there are two M's that I think are very important in really establishing where you stand, how to qualify a relationship. One of them is marriage. Gabby, you've recently been married to Lyndon, like recently as a week, right?
Yes, a whole 5 days.
And the other is, the other M.
Mortgage.
Darcy, you have just entered into a mortgage with Justin. So we have, I think it's important to qualify these things. Before the show started, we were talking about how to frame the conversation. And so as a launching pad, we're going to say myself as a writer and illustrator, and Lyndon as a writer and letterer, and Justin as a writer and illustrator, we lead fairly abnormal jobs. We keep strange hours, we have weird passions, we have strange obsessions, and you two have allowed me to typify you as keeping normal jobs. Is that okay if I do that?
Yes.
Yeah, that works for me.
That works for you? Okay, so the first question is, and maybe for the dear listener's sake, we should let them know that both of these gentlemen, whom I trust and admire, are away at New York Comic Con right now.
They are.
So just to further emphasize that you've only been married for how many days?
5 days.
And Lyndon has abandoned you almost instantly to go off on his odd job.
Abandoned with permission, we'll put it that way.
You have allowed him.
Yes.
A special dispensation.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And Justin should be packing boxes right now.
Yes.
But he is not.
No.
He has run off to New York Comic Con.
It's true.
Yeah. It's true. So the age-old adage of, you know, behind every weird dude is probably someone else, a woman usually, who has got it all figured out. Is that you too?
Yeah.
I want to give Lyndon the benefit of the doubt on this one and say that he's got some things figured out.
Some things.
But...
can you, elaborate on some of the things he has figured out?
He definitely knows what he wants, and I think he's still figuring out the path to getting there. And in the meantime, you know, one of us has to be the one with the normal job.
How about you, Darcy?
My normal job is sort of on hiatus right now anyways.
Oh, yeah, we could talk about that without naming names or putting anyone too much on the spot. One of you is on strike currently, and one of you is about to go on strike. Is that right?
Potentially.
Yes. So that leads us, for the dear listeners wondering, how did you get access to these elusive secret keepers? That is how. Their world is about to turn over, and so they have a little bit of extra time.
Extra time kicking around.
Okay, because I've never been able to ask either of you this directly, what's it like to live with Justin and Lyndon?
Go ahead, Abby.
And I want, the dear listener does not want to hear that everything is great. So make up at least one bad story.
Oh, no, I would say Lyndon and I get along very well. I mean, we wouldn't have made it to this point without that, for sure. We like to keep a normal routine, but sometimes Lyndon will be like, I need to write till 3 o'clock in the morning today, and that's just how it's going to be, and I have to be like, okay, the cat's going to be mad at you, but go for it.
Okay, let's hold on. I want to back up, because a lot of people who listen to the show are either creatives who fit it in around their normal jobs, or they're people who desperately hope they can leave their normal job to do this. What is that moment like when Lyndon says, okay, I'm going to stay up till 3 a.m. and I'm going to write?
My approach is always, okay, but are you going to sleep in tomorrow? Because if you're going to write till 3, you probably shouldn't get up at 6 to go to the gym. He has to go to the gym every day. Otherwise, it's really... Here's my story about Lyndon. If yes. you disrupt his routine, he is not a happy camper. I can't Lyndon. Spring things on him. If I'm like, can we go do this thing instead of you going to the gym this morning? He's going to give me a hard time. It's just how it's going
to
be.
See, I find that personally fascinating because his job here is to have things constantly sprung on him nonstop.
And maybe that's why in the other facets of his life, he likes to be very, I guess, routine oriented.
Difference is you pay him.
Well, yeah. Maybe that's it. Yeah,
that's true. But I think that routine is interesting. Now, Justin also has a pretty strict exercise regime.
He does, but usually afternoons, though.
Yeah, it's usually afternoons. Do you find that if his system is disrupted, that he's also a grumpy bear?
He has a system, but his system is all over the place. So I don't know. It's not as
be like the nature structured. Of water.
He has a list. He'll get to things on his list.
On the list, he's a lister. Yes. Is Lyndon a lister? I'm learning so much about them right now, too.
I think he's not much of a lister. He always tells me his list is in his head, which I'm very much a lister. Like, we've just finished our wedding. Our wedding party went on and on about my intense spreadsheet system, but he doesn't keep anything like that. So, I mean, I like to think that he's pretty organized.
See, in my experience, very much in his head, but the list is tight. Like, he will say, it's this day. Did you do this thing and this thing and this thing, which we have on the schedule? I'm like, what schedule? He's like, the one in my head. You told me to remind you.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, he always says, you know, he works in a creative field. He's constantly surrounded by creative people who think in a very sort of creative way about time and organization.
Let's put a pin in the word creative there. I think you could replace that with disorganized, perhaps impulsive, whimsical, mercurial sometimes.
Yeah, so I feel like he has less of that, but because I'm like a hyper organized person, sometimes it feels a little bit disorganized to me. But I also recognize that I'm like on my own plane.
Well, you're on another level.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so should I replace Lyndon with you to help us organize?
If you go on strike.
So I'm like, what I'm hearing is there's some openings here.
I don't know. I feel like it might be stressful for all of you to have to deal with me, with my hyper-organization, color-coded spreadsheets.
See, I feel, and now we're going to turn the spotlight around here. I feel this is an essential piece. Like our color-coded spreadsheet that we have up there, which sort of to you probably give you a heart attack looking at that, but this each of those tasks up there is a task that has to be done by a certain date, that which depending on where it is on that grid is what state of production it's in. And this is our way of keeping mercurial passion focused people on task by saying, okay, if you don't want to do the task that you're assigned today, you can do any task you want that's on the board.
Easy on spray starch. It must save me half an hour a day at least. You'll never run short of time again, I guarantee it.
I've just been tempted so many times to try Ezeon.
I'd say that's maybe a strength of Lyndon's, because he understands that, you know, feeding you all a color-coded crazy spreadsheet maybe is not going to do the job. So
yeah,
he's kind of meeting
him
in the middle.
Later, I'm sure, yeah. We'd have to just rely on his good writing instead of his good organizing. All right, Darcy, you've been kind of quiet over there.
Yeah.
I'm going to let the dear listener know that Darcy and I spent a romantic weekend together in Quebec City.
In
Quebec,
separate rooms.
Right? We were strolling on the boulevard. We went out for candlelit dinners. We had poutine, in Quebec City because Justin abandoned me yet again on the road, and so he sent a reliable proxy. However, you got to wear the full chasing artwork regalia. You got to inhabit the booth. You got to set up the booth.
All the things I never did before that I probably should have learned how to do before I went, yes.
So now that you've inhabited his life, let's give us some constructive feedback about how he could have better prepared you for life on the road.
Yeah, I probably should have gotten a demo on the backdrop. Because every time that we've traveled together, I've done probably 10 shows with him. He's put in his earbuds, and I just let him do his thing.
He and I are both control freaks that way. We just want to do it our way.
Just leave me alone and let me do my thing. And it looked fairly simple, and it should be fairly simple, except it was not fairly simple.
Dun, dun, dun. Like any magician's trick, right? Starts to look easy if you've done it 1,000 times.
But. Yeah, he also MacGyvers some things that I fail to take note of.
Yes. So. American listeners, MacGyver was a Canadian. Wasn't that Canadian? No, it was U.S. What am I thinking of? Oh, I'm thinking of Airwolf, which was the Canadian. No, that was
also Canadian. What?
I thought that was a Canadian production. I've just watched both of these shows. My producer has reminded me, producer Dan Vedermunker, that I know nothing about television programming from the 80s.
Danger
and I should.
Bay is the Canadian show.
Danger Bay. Relic, that's Danger Bay. No, that's a different one. That's the Beachcomber. All right, let's stick to talking about conventions and comics, which I clearly know better. Let's put this in the framework of someone sending a proxy to a show.
Yeah.
What should they tell them, Darcy?
Ooh. I feel like because I've already went, I should have known more than what I did.
So don't assume just because you went.
I'm
going to
take some blame for this.
Some responsibility.
Yes. I'm not going to blame Justin for everything.
This is the foundation of a strong relationship, those of you who are keeping notes, right? Accepting accountability.
But he was on call. I called him at whatever time we got. When did we show up on Saturday? Saturday morning, like 7:30 a.m., which was 6:30 a.m. He did answer his phone.
That's right. Yes.
To stop me from crying, to give me directions.
Contextually, for the dear listener, though I made it sound like a fun romantic romp in Quebec City, our flight was 6 hours late, luggage was lost, we missed our setup window, we had to suddenly set up what normally is a nice, relaxing 3 or 4 hour setup in a 2.5 hour like sprint. One of us had done it before and one of us had not.
Right.
And so it was not the idyllic, perfect adventure.
And your setup is a little different than Justin's.
Yes.
And you don't really pay attention to other people's
how they do
weird
it.
Ways.
Yeah. So when you're building a world at a show, you have this little footprint and you have a little space that you have to fill up, and we bring photography stands and clamps and zip ties and all this stuff to build the armature that then the art can be displayed on. So from the outside, it looks easy. When you walk up to it, it looks like, oh, a nice, beautiful display.
But you just pop it up and...
Yeah, and pop it down. And we do.
Yep.
But it takes a while to get it just so.
Yes. I feel like I should be taking notes because I'm sure my time will come.
Your time will come. Is that something that would be interesting to you, to go on the road?
I think so.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I haven't had a lot of opportunity to do that just yet. I mean, partly Lynch and I have been together for about 4 years, and two of those years were COVID. One of those years we decided to live in France.
I was gonna say ran off to live in a small town in France, if that.
So, you know, Lyndon's kind of just getting, this is the first, I guess, year where there's been a lot of shows. So I hope the opportunity comes in the future. I had a chance to visit him at Winnipeg Comic Con last fall, and I'm looking forward to that again this year. But I haven't yet stepped behind the table.
My own wife, Tara, is not that interested in doing shows. She's very creative in her own right. She has a whole other realm that she does stuff in. And so, but she's basically an introvert. And so the extrovert nature of needing to have those million micro interactions with people is very exhausting to her. And so not a big fan of shows. But one time when I said, we're going to New York City, I need help, shoot that show, I'll do. So,
I feel about the same way.
Yeah.
You know, Lynn tells me we're going to Chicago or LA or something like that, I'm there, I'm coming.
You're in for the adventure.
Yes, absolutely.
Did either of you know that your significant others were so strange before it was too late? Like,
yes.
Had you already fallen in love with them and then...
Well, I knew Justin at the gym for years before we started dating.
Right.
So, like, I knew of him and I knew of his studio.
You knew he always dropped his left arm too low. Right? He had a weak jab. You knew all these things. So you knew him from the gym, but how did you find out that he had a secret other life as an artist and not just as a poster boy for sweating
at
the gym?
All I knew, like, that was just Yeah, I think I always knew. That's what he did. I didn't understand it. Don't get me wrong. I had no idea how this was a thing, but...
How did it look on the outside to you? I want to drill down into that idea now. For the dear listener's sake, in interest of full disclosure, Darcy and I had a practice conversation related to this already. We didn't know it was, but about this idea that from the outside, oh, we draw pictures and take them places. Seemed
yeah,
like.
He often makes a comment when I'm having a tough day at my normal job, and he'll go, I drew robots today. And it always makes me laugh, but it seems like such a different world that we live in.
Like if you have an interpersonal conflict at work and you have to talk about it. And,
like, deadlines and, you know, political whatever.
Yeah, I couldn't get this imaginary robot arm to look right in the composition. Yeah. Does that bother you?
No, I laugh at it now because it puts it into perspective that it's really not a big deal. Right? So
his robot arm or your?
Both.
Now, these two gentlemen are different stages in their career, I think, a little bit. It's fair to say. Justin's been doing it now for
12,
you know, 15 years, if you think about, like, time that he was working, I think, on the side around his other job. This is fair. Justin can correct me next episode, but I think it's fair to say. He's been leaning hard into it for 15 years, and Lyndon is sort of fresh. He abandons law school.
He did finish law school.
Oh, yeah. Like
he
does, passed the bar.
Yeah, he passed he passed all his examinations. And when I first met him, he was articling. So he was just finishing up the law stuff, if you will. And
he got offered more than one job, as I recall, because he's quite good at his job.
Yeah. But to be completely honest, and our friends definitely know this about us, I almost did not go out with him because he was a lawyer.
Oh.
I found it very unattractive. I had this idea in my head of the lawyer type, and it's just not
my
type.
Let's talk about the lawyer type. Can we talk about the lawyer type? If we cross into dangerous territory, Dan's got your back.
Okay. If I say something incriminating.
Yeah, we will cut it around.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So, dear listener, if suddenly the audio cuts to something, you'll know why.
Two things I always carry. Tampax and ringdings. And I don't even want to think what that means.
Tell us about the lawyer type.
The lawyer type?
What was wrong with Lyndon? He was broken inside, you fear.
Well, I guess my idea in my mind about someone that's a lawyer would be someone who's very much, their career is the most important focus in their life, and they're working all the time, and they're very money-focused. That was my idea of what a lawyer was. And, I mean, maybe I had a bad experience because, I mean, Lyndon knows this. It's not a secret. I went out with another lawyer, nothing serious before, and it didn't go well. So I had these, you know, preconceived notions.
Look at Dan's face at the hot goss. Look at the real concern
gossip.
On
you.
It's,
one lawyer, I mean, fool you once.
Fool you once.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, and lo and behold, we have a first date, and we talked almost exclusively about literature our entire conversation. I'm like, oh, I guess you're not... You're kind of a lawyer on paper, but not in spirit. And for the record, Lyndon still does work all the time, but in a way that I can see how passionate he is and how, you know, engaged he is in a joyful way. I think law work kind of sucked out his soul a little bit. But even when we first met, he was working on a number of side projects. I mean, at that point, creative things were side projects. And when he talked about them, that's when he was the most happy, the most excited. And that's the part of him that was most attractive to me, I guess.
The spark, is that the same for you? You don't have to gush about it if you don't want to.
I'm a newlywed.
I wish I could describe the size of her smile right now.
Like, just the, just following your passion and being able to make a living out of it and being able to do all these things and being able to travel and still be able to pay your bills, like... Those were the kind of things that, like, when I met him, I didn't think that this was a thing. I didn't think that this was really a bill paying.
You were like, oh, he's an artist. Like, that's so cute.
Okay, well, we can work with this. Like, I make okay money. I guess we can figure this out.
You thought you'd have to support poor
destitute. Yeah, which is probably terrible, but I didn't understand this world at all. And it wasn't until he took me to the first Toronto, I guess it was a fan expo, 6 months into our relationship that I actually understood how big this thing is.
Well, one thing that I think is, and this will be just me gushing about your two, the loves of your lives now. What I like about both of them is they're very humble in their own accomplishments.
Yes, I agree with that.
They won't toot their own horn unless I force them to. Anytime I want to bring up one of their accomplishments and I mention it before one of these episodes, both of them give me the cringe face. Like, we don't really have to do that. I was like, well, if we're going to talk about the whole story, we got to talk about when it works and when it doesn't. And when it's working for you guys, we should share it. And they're, you know, they're very humble. So yes. I think that.
But they should be proud of their accomplishments, right? But yeah, they are still humble in that they're not going to brag.
Yeah, you should never apologize for an accomplishment. But
yeah, I agree. I definitely promised in my vows to compliment Lyndon against his will.
Against his will. He doesn't take a compliment well?
No, he is very humble. And I appreciate about that about him, but I agree with you. I think you need to be proud of the work that you've done.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, knowing what you know now, and now that you have both inculcated yourselves into this other side of their lives, like you're sitting in the chairs they would normally sit in, you've done the jobs that they would normally do, like Darcy has, and you see it in a different way. Has it changed how you see them? You know, we always are evolving. How I see my wife and how she sees me, I think it changes every couple of years as we spend time together. But has that changed for you guys?
I guess evolved. I don't know about changed. But, yeah, like...
You've changed, man. Not like that, but...
No, but just, yeah, and just with COVID, right? Like, when Justin and I first started dating, he was gone 32 weeks out of the year. Like, he was rarely home. And then COVID hit, and he was there all the time, and now it's like equaled out.
Are you relieved that he's out more?
No, not really. I definitely miss him when he's away.
And you go with him fairly often.
I like going with. I'd rather go with him to these shows than by myself. I mean, you were fun and all, but I'd rather be with Justin. Sorry, Greg.
Well, it's less snuggling when we go, right? It's just the cold concrete B&B rooms. That's all we get for comfort. So one thing I wanted to ask both of you is, and I don't mean to put you on the spot. Well, I do mean to put you on the spot, but if you feel uncomfortable, we'll navigate around it. How do you see your partner's relationship with their work when it starts to go to 3 a.m., when it starts to take them away, when it starts to consume all their waking time, when they don't want to talk about anything but that? How does that affect your, you know, the balance in your relationship? And this is a leading question because this is a major lever in my own relationship where I have to be careful not to overrun Tara's interests with mine. And as Dan would point out, because my voice is louder, I use the more muted microphone here, right? What do you think? Are they too obsessed? Do they need to chill?
I don't think so.
No?
How do you feel?
I think from my side, I'm trying to think the best way to word this. I feel like I know when to say it's too much, but also Lyndon recognizes like the signals coming from me. And this is something we're still working on. I mean, relationships are always evolving and trying to figure out the best way to communicate when we need more time together. I mean, I'm really straightforward and just say, you've been working too much. We need to go do something together.
I was going to ask, but you jumped I will right
just,
into it. Yeah.
I'll just say it, come out and straight say it. Like, you know, tomorrow you're taking a day off, whether you like it or not.
Well, that explains some of the texts I get. That's good.
But I'm also respectful of there's deadlines and things like that, especially at this point. Lyndon does a lot of various freelance work. I mean, at some point he'd like to transition to working exclusively for himself, I'm sure. But, you know, we're getting there one day at a time.
And just so people know, because it's official now, Lyndon's probably, as we speak, sitting at a table with Scott Snyder and Tom Hardy right now in New York City talking about their next project. So there's a time ahead of him where I'm sure it's all going to work out for him.
Well, and I think I recognize that and he recognizes that too. And it's just a matter of putting in the work. And now's the right time for us. I mean, we don't have any major commitments. We don't have a mortgage or anything like that. So,
yeah. How about yourself? What do you think?
I need you to repeat the question.
Okay, so the framework is, How do you let Justin know when the obsession has eaten too much of your time in the relationship?
I think the dog
when, as
does
I said that,
that
out
actually.
Loud, I, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. I realize the conversation I need to have with Tara when I get home. I think I finally understand. Okay, carry on.
I think getting the dog solves some of that because he has to take a break to take her out.
Pistachio is so,
the dog is a little needy, needs to go out a lot, and it purposely forces him to take a break. And because we go to the gym together, he also is very structured in going to the gym at 5:30, which I'm there. So it's not that, like, I like my alone time too, so it balances out. Yeah.
Now this is turning into a unintended therapy session. I realized that when I was growing up, my mother was a very private, very stoic person. She worked on art as a hobby for her whole life, and then when she retired, she leaned into making stained glass in a serious way. And she was very quiet, liked to be alone. My dad is very gregarious, very busy, and these two things combined in me, obviously. So I'm super busy. I like to talk to people. I'm not too afraid of a strange conversation that I've never had before. But I also love to make work all the time. And in that space, I find it sometimes very difficult to fit anyone else's time into. And so then this is me now asking for advice, right? Tara has put up with me now for almost 25 years.
Wow.
We've been together. So we've worked out a lot of different facets of our relationship, but as this side of my life grows more demanding, what's some advice that I can ask from you? So what am I missing? What should I do to let her know how valuable she is to me? I think it's important. Lyndon would, you know, you guys have just leaped over the marriage line, and you've just leaped over the mortgage line, which is something that Tara and I did, you know, 15 years ago, 25 years ago we got together. And so how do I keep it fresh? You guys look so pleased with them. I want Tara to be as pleased with me as you are with them. Help me.
We've been living separately up until a couple months ago, and now we're getting a house where we'll have separate areas. But for the last couple months, I've just been working off the couch in his place. So we've always been sort of around each other. And then he'd come here. What was the question again? I have no idea.
Dave brought us here because of land values. He's best in bed when the market's up.
It seems like you guys still like your spouses, and I want Tara to stick around for another 25 years. Right? And I just want to make sure I get it. No, but see, it's different from my side of the table. You're a little bit, and I don't know if everyone heard Dan. I'm sure that you could hear yourself. Okay, so he said I should give advice. The truth is, on this side of the table, it's a constant battle between complete self-absorption and total loss of time. No understanding of what it takes away during my creative time from other people's time. I'll disappear for 15 hours into my own head, and then boom, a whole bunch of stuff came out of that. But I was gone for 15 hours of my family's life, right? And so I don't know that I'm the best person to ask for advice.
But you are very conscious of spending time with your family, though.
That's something I've noticed.
So I don't know.
Thanks.
Well, you made it very clear, like, your kids are a priority, your wife's a priority, so, like, maneuvering your job around. I don't know. I don't know you as well, but...
We need Tara on the podcast. I'd be afraid. No. She said, let's keep me out of that side of your life, is what she said the last time.
She can join our future podcast.
Yeah, maybe.
The Wives of Comic Guys.
Well, you see, it's funny, because she would say, I don't want to come on to your podcast as your wife. You can come onto my podcast as my husband, if you'd like, is how she framed it. So I think that's part of it. But she has her own mountains to climb in that regard. So, yeah. So you have nothing for me. You have no advice. Thanks
well, I guess the one thing that I'm thinking about, recognizing that, you know, Linda and I have only been, we've been together for 4 years and living together for a while, but... You know, we don't have any kids or anything like that. We have a very demanding cat who acts like a child sometimes, but that's about it.
Right.
So it's obviously a different stage. And I appreciate that Lyndon can both, he can recognize the cues of when, like, I need some attention, essentially. And I hope that's when we can continue, because I know, you know, as soon as there's kids in the mix, that becomes a whole different ball game, especially, like, as a couple. And I imagine the creative path, in addition to that, is it's just a different world that you have to deal with. So I hope that we can continue down that path of communication and recognizing each other's cues. As it stands right now, one thing that is helpful to us is that, I mean, both of us are also, both of us are pretty introverted, and there are certain things we like to do, like, by ourselves, but together. Like, in the evenings, I often just need to decompress a little. I like to play video games. So right now he's working on, I don't know if he's going to like that I said this, but we'll see. He's been doing a lot of drawing tutorials.
Yes.
I don't know if he shared that with you.
This is not public knowledge, but I know he's been practicing knowledge. Because we have a project that we said you have to be a writer and illustrator to participate.
Because he's not historically someone that illustrates. So he's doing a bunch of drawing tutorials. So in the evenings, he'll sit and draw for a couple of hours, and I'll play video games. And we're very content sitting together on the couch, each doing our thing, but together. But I also know that that's sort of a, it's not necessarily going to be something we can maintain permanently if there's other priorities in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
So pre-kids for you, Gregory, what was sort of the paint the picture? How did you guys function?
Yeah, so I was, so I had the normal job. So, okay, so within that 25 years, we went through both Tara and I, neither of us having normal jobs, and then her beginning a career, and she was a socioeconomic analyst. She went through scientific training. She did the career path, and I had gone through school and an entrepreneurship degree and opened a small business, and so we kind of got together at a time when her career was starting, and I opened a retail location. Don't do that. This is not a good... I don't believe this is a good recipe for spending quality time together, and it certainly wasn't. And I realized I could either be a good entrepreneur or I could be a good spouse, but I couldn't do both at the same time. And so we closed the business, actually. My business partner and I, he was having the same struggle. His wife was very busy, and he was too busy, and he was like, you know, what's it really for if the people that we love are the ones we never see? And so we decided to close the business. And I went back to school. So Tara had the normal job, and I had the student lifestyle. And of course, studying literature at that time, of course, it's the worst, because what do? If you have to do a scientific study, it's textbooks, it's memorization, it's rote learning, it's calculation. If you are doing a literature or anything to do with the humanities, you're lying in a field somewhere, licking your fingers and slowly turning pages while you wiggle your foot, you know, which is crossed, and the dandelions are blowing around you. Like, that's what studying looks like for you. So she was a little like, you're back at school, I see that, but mostly you just sit in the sun and read. I don't know if you're really putting in the work here. But I finished my degree in, 60% of the time that was required to do it, so I was putting in the work. And then when I got a full-time job, it was the same time kids came along. So then she was out of that while we were managing that. And we decided she could either go back to work and we could fight about time, or we could fight about money. And you can always find some more money somewhere. And so rather than that, she's like, okay, well, I'm going to stay with the kids during this critical juncture, and you're going to go do all the heavy lifting and keep a normal job during that period. And then once... once I figured out a balance to balance, Tara, if you're listening, I know it's the incorrect use of the word in this particular instance, but once I found a balance between my creative output and my job and my family, I started producing books regularly, and every year I was teaching for 10 years, I put out a book or two until I had a big enough sort of back catalog to step out of that job into, I wouldn't say a regular job, but, you know, a regular income. And so then it was stable enough that we could make that work. So
it's always fluctuated sort of how to sustain this.
Absolutely. Yeah. The one constant has been change every couple of years. We sit down and we talk. where are we going to be in 3 years? What do you think is going to happen? You know, and particularly with publishing, maybe this is an important thing to mention to the two of you. In publishing, things are 36-month plans. It can take that long to get a book from, hey, I had an idea, to now it's finished, to now it's to market, to now I'm promoting it. That's 3 years. And so it's important to look at what those 3 years will entail. You know, I'm going to be away a bunch in that room. I'm going to be present physically, but I'm going to be away in that room while I'm creating. And then when it's created, I'm going to be away a bunch out in the world. And in both of those periods of time, I'm not going to be available for anything, right? And anything that gets in the way of that feels like a step backwards, and you try not to. Like for me, the struggle was to, I'm good now. Last 10 years, this is how I feel. The first 10 years was a lot more difficult. So in the first 10 years, every interruption felt like an interruption of the work. And now interruptions feel like a reason to take a break from the work. And it took a while for that switch to go off in my head to say, like, oh, my son's come up. He needs me for something. Perfect. I can take a break. Right? And so I use that metronome in my own life as an okay thing. They know they can knock. They know they can interrupt. If it's absolutely critical deadline time, I usually put those hours in after everyone's gone to sleep.
I think that's a really good point and something that I hope Lyndon will listen in. Keep in mind, like I like that sort of framing it as interruptions being a break from the work as opposed to, I don't know, a more negative way of seeing things.
Yeah, I mean, I stole that straight from Stephen King, really. He, if I can paraphrase it correctly, said to be reminded when you're writing that life supports art, not the other way around. And so you can't be upset when life comes at you, when you're in the middle of trying to like get your word count in, because really, the stuff outside your word count is the stuff that really matters, right? And the stuff you don't want to do without.
I hope that's something we can take with us. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, whether it's like an office job like Gabby and I have or you guys, like breaks are important. So, you know, deadlines, yes, you'll work really long days or whatever, either one of us. But taking those breaks actually make you more efficient in what you're doing. So.
Right. And, you know, unions would agree with you. Right?
That's true.
Now, you both have jobs, and I won't put you on the spot to talk about them, but you both have jobs where sometimes you have to bring some stuff home in your heads. But for the most part, your work doesn't need to come home with you.
Right.
Is that true?
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
Okay, so your work doesn't come home with you, but their work does all the time.
Yeah.
Is that cause any consternation? Like, does it bother them that you get to, hey, it's quitting time. I'm not going to think about that. But
I don't think it bothers
them.
No,
I don't think so.
They're both listening right now, and so they'll know.
Yeah, I think it's more of a, I think Lyndon wants to be thinking about those things.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not some of the tasks once in a while, but for the most part, you know, he's in his happy place when he's making things. So, I mean, I like to think it's a little different than some of the office jobs where you don't really want to bring bureaucracy home with you, but maybe you do want to bring art home with you.
I think there are times when Walter cares more about the law than he does about me.
Now, both of you have other pursuits besides your jobs. Would you care to elucidate our dear listeners what you spend your time doing when you aren't at your secret other jobs or participating in a strike action?
Like Justin and I both go boxing, so that's one of our evening tasks. I've always really been into travel, so it's kind of been nice to go to different places with Justin to see different cities that I wouldn't normally go to and vice versa.
Leading question, but just a little bit of travel. How many countries have you been to?
40.
Just 40.
Wow.
Just 40.
That's incredible.
Right. I celebrated my 40th birthday in my 40th country with Justin in Iceland, just to bring that up again. This one time I went to Iceland with Justin.
Oh, my God. How about you? When you are not playing video games, what are you up to?
Other than video games and reading, which is two of my big, I would say, hobbies, I'm very involved in gymnastics. I used to be a competitive gymnast, and I still coach a few times a week. I'm a gymnastics judge, so especially in the winter months, most of my weekends are devoted to that, and I still love it. I still love being involved in that. And I'm always planning something. So now that the wedding's over, I'm looking to plan a Japanese honeymoon.
Oh, so fun.
Going to Japan sometime next year, so that'll be my next project. Linda knows I need a project all the time.
This isn't for like a second marriage. This is
No, we're planning to go to Japan for a honeymoon, so I always need some kind of project to work on that involves spreadsheets, so.
Planning trips in a spreadsheet. We'll get along.
Yeah.
Okay, so both of you described hobbies, essentially. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a danger if your hobby starts to take over too much of your life?
No, I don't think so. I really feel like I'm the kind of person that working in an office is working in an office, but I like the routine of like the 9 to 5 and then going home and not having to think about it anymore. Like, it just suits my personality, I think. So, I'm not necessarily think that I imagine myself pursuing sort of a career path outside of that box, if that makes sense. It's just my person, but you never know what could happen. I think Lyndon would be supportive if suddenly I decided that I wanted to completely shift and go in a different direction. I think he would be, but I don't think as it stands that I imagine that happening.
If a spark struck, then you would support it. So in my own side of things, when it was, you know, I'm throwing air quotes over it, when it was time for Tara to go back to work, she said, you know, we've got some money in the bank and I don't think I want to go back to a regular job. And I said, oh, amazing. Because she had always been, in my, you know, from my point of view, the more creative of the two of us. And so I always thought it was very brave of her to take on the corporate side of things and just like charge through that. The most creative person I know, happy to take on corporate nonsense. And then when she said, you know, I don't think I want to do that anymore. How do you feel about that? I was giddy. I was just so excited, but I didn't know how to properly encourage it except to say like, yeah. She's like, well, how's that going to work? And I was like, I have no idea, but who cares? Let's figure it out. So
I've had a lot of people ask me, you know, if you come to a point where Lyndon's working exclusively for himself and he felt that he needed to hire someone to work for him, like, would you do it? Would you leave your other job and do it? And I've always said, I don't think so.
That's what Tara would say too.
Yeah, because having my own sort of things that I'm doing. Like, I don't want to just, you know, I don't want to be his employee. Yeah, I want to be his wife and his partner.
Still need to keep that independence and separation just slightly. I don't mind working a little bit for him.
Exactly.
But I still need my own. My nephew actually asked me the exact same thing. Are you just going to work for Justin full time? And I was like, no. And he's like, no.
Yeah, I would definitely be on board. You know, trip somewhere, work the table. Absolutely. Yeah. Full time business manager. Definitely not.
No. Definitely not. Do you think that they both, this is a question that I think I personally know the answer to. Do you think that they need business managers? Don't see a huge grin, avoiding the question.
I think there's some opportunity to have a little bit more structure.
That was very political.
Oh, good. Political. I learned something.
Justin, I will translate. Get your shit together.
Instructions for how to set up the booth.
Yeah, proper instructional
videos.
That's
kind of my job, is doing training, so I'm going to definitely
So you could help train the people.
Mm-hmm.
So if he needed proxies.
Proper job aids and instructional videos, I'm on it.
So it would be fair to say, if he wanted to hire you to do what
task,
you're good at.
Yeah.
And create an instructional set of videos and follow through, what is it, a task list, I guess, for proxies?
Yeah,
you could do that?
That's easy enough, yeah.
Easy. Yeah. Can I hire you to do that?
Yes.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. This is what
as long as you pay me more than strike pay.
I'm sure we will do that. We're doing our time then. Well, is there anything that you wish you knew about their lives? So, what I was interested in is having two people who see the other side of these gentlemen who I spend so much time with. But maybe turnabout is fair play. Is there something you want to know about their time here in studio that you've oft wondered?
I want to know how much time is actually productive time and how much time is doing other things.
Yeah, I would say that we spend 80% of our time not stopping working and racing towards something.
Yeah.
And that maybe about 20% of the time, I divide it in my head of that 20%, 10% is like getting to know you, right? Let's just be human beings together.
Absolutely.
Let's go for a walk, grab a coffee, let's go have lunch or whatever. But, and then that other 10% is, you know, maybe we're dicking around on our phones or something. But
That makes sense, because I know Lyndon said he always feels most productive in the studio.
Yeah.
And I know when he often works at home, but I think there's more distractions at home, whether it's me or the cat or something else.
There's also a tension that builds up when you look across and you see the other person leaning into their work. And that's something of all three of our personalities, we're definitely, it brings out the like. So when I look over and Lyndon is like hardcore, he's got his headphones in and he's just finishing the task, I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to beat him. We're working on completely different tasks. I want to go just as fast. And Justin is the same way. If he's, you know, racing to arrange a distributor or racing to get a whole bunch of infrastructure to get the art out into the world, I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to finish that press release. I'm going to get this thing done. I'm going to email the agent. And we are sort of in competition with each other just in body language. And then usually somebody takes a deep breath and says, oh, okay, who wants to go for a coffee? And I can say it has nothing to do with the hot brown morning potion and everything to do with the walk out of the room to just decompress a little bit and stroll around and then come back, get our focus, and then get back to it.
There's something to be said about that, because I've been working from home most of COVID and most of the time when I am working. But those days back in the office, I don't feel like I'm getting as much accomplished, but the socialization and the collaboration, I think, is super important
mm-hmm.
to keep maintained.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think especially, I kind of always imagine creative work to be sort of isolating at times, because you're so much in your own head and you're trying to put it on the page however that looks. So I think having other people in the same boat around you probably creates a really supportive environment.
Mm-hmm. And here in this room, anyway, the unit of exchange that we deal with in the world, like how the world absorbs what we do, is the page, right? We're always creating either a page of artwork that is a print, or it's a canvas, or it's a comic book page, but that page. And there are only so many ways to solve the equation of this many words, this many actions, this many beats on the page. And so when any of us are stuck, it's really fun to play if this, then that with the room. Hey, guys, come and look at this. What if I change this and move this over here? What does that do for the reading flow? Oh, what if we move that? And everyone has their own style of working. And so we're able to lay 3, sometimes 4 or 5, depending on who's in studio that day, different points of view on what the end result is. And that is so instructive for the problem-solving aspect of our jobs. I find that the real reason to be in a room together. We could all work from home, frankly, but we would be a lot slower and a lot less focused actually at home, I think. I think the studio is an essential part of us being able to accomplish what we're able to accomplish. Yeah. And some of the stuff we just leave here, like look at this mess. You don't want this in your house. Right.
This is why Gabby can't work here and try to organize you, because it'll be like this all the time.
So yeah,
like, clean it up.
Come in, clean it, and it'll be like this the next day, I imagine. Yeah.
But what we're missing is the systems that prevent this. So in our workflow, this is part of the system, though,
that's future Gregory's problem.
Future
that's
Gregory.
Your system.
Look at that, future Gregory's problem. It's right over there. That's a stack of comics. Well, part of what we have to do here at the studio is once we've created the work, we also have to figure out how to bring it to market and skip the middle person. And since it's just us, normally at a big corporation, someone would pack that box and someone would ship that box. But I got a phone call in the middle of that pile that meant I had to start that pile over there. And then while I was working on that pile, I got a phone call that meant I had to put those out to get those ready for a different thing, right? And so now all of those are, you know, like desktop items, except the desktop is the studio floor. And then when all five of us are in here, we're all doing that. And it's just, it's chaos. It feels like chaos. But then, and we're coming up to it now, after October, we do the clean.
The fall cleaning.
We put everything away. I Studio Ghibli the floor. I just get like a scrub and I run back and forth, you know, like that little girl in
Spirited Away.
That's me. Picture her, but it's me. That's how I clean the floor in this place. I love doing it. And we scrub it all and then we go into hibernation mode where we're just in a really clean space for a couple of months. We just make stuff and we just make up ideas and I'm really looking forward to it this year because it's been a hell of a year. So I would love to invite both of you to come regularly to the Clean Studio in November.
I thought you were going to say, I invite you to come clean with us. And I was going to say, no.
No, that's our problem. That's our problem. I know, but after
that's
25
teacher Gregory's
years,
problem.
After 25 years, one thing I've learned is you don't say, Tara, come and clean up my mess.
Yeah.
Right? No. No. That's not good. Ladies, I have so enjoyed our conversation. I so enjoyed traveling with you, Darcy, too.
Yeah,
that
me
was
too.
A, that
it
was a fun
time.
Adventure that I that came as a pleasant surprise. And Gabby, you have been a semi-regular visitor to the studio space. And so it's nice to hear in your own words everything that's wrong with Lyndon. I'm glad to get it on the record.
And congratulations on your wedding.
Oh, thank you.
Congratulations. So this has been Super Pulp Science, where we talk about how genre gets made. And this special episode, we talked about how relationships get made that make the genres possible to be made in the first place. This is Gregory Kmicek encouraging you to join the fight and make comics.